My mama used to say not to worry, 'cause it's just like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but to tell you the truth.
Hey mamas, you're listening to the Whole Mama Podcast with Jenna Gibbons. We'll talk all things motherhood and how to build a solid foundation for our children. Our goal is to empower and educate and provide the tools to embrace motherhood and raise compassionate and confident lifelong learners. We believe that as mamas, we need to give ourselves some grace, and our children deserve the best education. I'm your host, Jenna Gibbons, recording right from my barn outside of Nashville, Tennessee. So throw something comfy on and grab a mug of your favorite drink, and let's get started. We have so much to talk about. Thanks for joining me today. Welcome to the Whole Mama Podcast. This is Jenna. Welcome to this episode with Dr. Maureen Michelle. I'm so excited to have her today. So grab your mug and get ready to dive into an incredibly informative chat with Dr. Michelle. She is a pediatrician, life coach, and author who helps parents of chronically ill children learn to thrive instead of survive in their lives. She's a mother of three amazing children and has firsthand experience with being a parent of a child with long-term health issues. She has also authored a book titled Reclaiming Life, which is a guide for parents of chronically ill children. Welcome, Dr. Michelle. I'm so excited to have you.
Thank you. It is such a pleasure to be here. I'm so grateful for you for allowing me to come and share a little bit of wisdom and conversation with your audience.
Thank you. I'm so honored to have you here today and to talk about such an important topic. And so, friends, today we're going to chat about a couple of things. First of that being learning how to be a courageous advocate for your child. We're also going to talk about understanding overwhelm by learning the four categories of thoughts that create the emotion of overwhelm, which I'm excited to learn about because I feel like I'm overwhelmed every day. And then also we're going to learn some tips to live a full and rewarding life despite a child's health needs. And so, again, I'm so excited to have you here, Dr. Michelle. And if you could just kind of briefly give us a little bit of your background and kind of how you got into helping parents through this and just, you know, how you currently help them as well.
Yes, of course. So I'm going to kind of back up time a little bit and just share that I have always wanted to be a pediatrician. Like I didn't want to go to medical school to be a doctor. I wanted to go to medical school to take care of kids. I also wanted to be a mom. And when I went and graduated from medical school, I did a pediatric residency, and I was doing medical school and residency in the military, in the Army, was pregnant with my first child when I was a pediatric intern, gave birth to my second child during my residency. My second child is my daughter. When she was 6 months old and I was a third year pediatric resident, they found out that she had a lump in her belly and was diagnosed with neuroblastoma, which is a type of pediatric cancer. It was a tumor of her adrenal gland, so that sits right on top of her kidney. And I, at that point in time, like when I got that news, I it was like an out of body experience because I felt like, being a doctor, that I took care of sick kids. Like I didn't have sick kids. That was my like protection. So my world kind of got flipped and turned upside down. Went through surgery, she went through chemotherapy. She was on the path of doing fantastic. We continued with annual follow-ups, and she remain and still remains cancer-free. So that's huge
Amazing.
blessing.
Yes.
And so I thought it was like all behind me. And I will tell you, during that time, like, and afterwards, even when she got a cold, like in my mind, it wasn't, was never just a cold. It was like, oh my goodness, is this something coming back? So the it was a massive challenge. The when she then was 12, she texted me from school one day and said, "Mom, you need to do something because I have peed 12 times today." And so again, like I thought to myself, well, we already went through the whole cancer thing, like check that box. And I wasn't even supposed to have a kid who was ever really sick. And so she must just have a urinary tract infection. I brought to her school a urine cup and a urine dipstick because the doctor side of me w said, well, of course, I'm going to diagnose her with this urinary tract infection before we get home so I can go back to the hospital and get whatever antibiotic she needs for this. She meets me in the school lobby. I give her the urine cup and she goes into this tiny little school bathroom and calls me in when she's done. And I take the dipstick and dip it into the urine and pull it out. And like immediately the glucose measurement on the dipstick like goes super dark. And I knew as a pediatrician that the only diagnosis that does that is type 1 diabetes. And so in the school bathroom with just me and my daughter, like I start crying and I tell her, Kylie, like you have diabetes. And she at this point, like doesn't really know why I'm crying. And so she just starts crying because she's scared, like, because clearly I'm emotional about it. She says, "Mom, am I gonna die?" And I said, No, you're not gonna die." And she's like, "Well, why are you crying?" And I said, "Well, because I don't want you to have diabetes." And so that then was the start of a another kind of medical journey with her. And I, throughout my medical career, I, because of what I had gone through with parenting, I kind of was drawn to taking care of patients who had chronic illness and kids with cerebral palsy, or kids with autism, or kids with diabetes, or kids with immunodeficiency. And I know in the office, like I wasn't just taking care of the kids, like I was truly like helping the families in addition to, taking care of the medical things that need to be taken care of. And I realized like I wanted to do something more, and to be able to kind of share the lessons that I had learned in my journey to help those who have a similar path, and to make it a little bit easier for them. Became a certified life coach, and now have the ability to work with parents in a more personal way, and really help them develop those skills that I really wish I had when I was going through all of this. This, it's almost like taking lemons and making lemonade that I'm actually very grateful for the experience that I've been given with my daughter, that it has made me a better parent. It's made me a better physician. It's made me an incredible life coach. And to have the ability to teach other families how to do it better than I even did when I was going through it is like such a blessing.
It's amazing. What an incredible story. You're incredible. And I think for families to not feel, because I think I would assume that that feeling of isolation, feeling alone is another heaviness that they encounter. And I'm sure that you felt, and to have someone like you with have not only from the doctor's perspective, but from a parent who's gone through it, is an incredible thing to be able to share with them. So that's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a part in the book that I write about. I write about support. And when you say about like feeling alone, that I can tell you, I had such a hard time with asking for help because it to me, it was like this sign of weakness on if I ask for help, it's telling people I can't handle this. And I don't want anybody to know that I'm weak or vulnerable. And I can't ask for help. And oh my goodness, like such the wrong thing to do. Like it's not a sign of weakness to ask for help, like such a sign of courage to be able to, an insight to be able to say, like, no, I need help, that I am, stranded on this island and need, my tribe to like step in here because this is not going well.
And how old is your daughter now?
She is 22. Yes,
And
at
she's doing.
22, and she's in medical school actually,
Sweet.
and is really wants to do immunology to be able to figure out like the kind of genetic piece of all of this to help
Wow.
others who and I also I'm lucky too that she doesn't remember any of the cancer experience, thank goodness, but has now lived with diabetes for 10 years, and she teaches me every day like how to do that with grace and courage. And it's amazing what we can learn from our own children if we just pay attention to them.
Oh, they're our greatest teachers, I feel. I love
Yeah, for
learning
sure.
everything.
Oh my goodness. Yes.
On the good days and the challenging days.
And yeah, absolutely.
So how can parents, be courageous advocates for their children, in terms of exactly what you kind of talked about, and why is that so important?
Yeah. So, you know, I, as a physician, saw the need for parents to be able to advocate for their kids, right? Is I, my approach in the clinic was to always make sure that a parent, knew what was going on with their child, and to involve them and to have kind of shared decision making in the office. But through my experience as a physician, I also know that there's a lot of hangups that parents have that they don't like being put in that position of being an advocate. Most often it's because they have thoughts that they're not well equipped to do it. Meaning they know their kid, they love their kid, super important for being an advocate, right? But there's a lot of parents that think I can't advocate for my child because I don't know enough medical stuff to be able to do it. And what if I'm wrong? And so all of these kind of thoughts go on in our head and hold us back. And I can even remember myself, even with me being a doctor, when after the whole bathroom experience with Kylie and we go off to the emergency room, the ER doc who sees her says to me, "Well, we need to get a chest X-ray on her." And I was like, "Wait, what? I didn't say anything about a cough. She didn't have a fever. We're not talking pneumonia. I'm talking diabetes. What? Chest X-ray?" And and so he says, "Well, you know, there we just need to make sure that it's not pneumonia." And in my mind, when he said this, I knew this was not the right thing to do from a medical standpoint. And I also knew that because of her history, she had gotten a lot of exposure to radiation from imaging done throughout her kind of cancer journey. And it was my opportunity to save her from getting another useless X-ray, right? And I totally failed because the thought that I had was like, I can't argue with this person because he's a colleague of mine, and I did not feel courageous. I wanted to just zip it and okay, fine, let's get the X-ray. And I from that experience, and me, who's somebody who, because of my medical background, should have been amazing at advocating for my child. And I realize if I'm having trouble with this, I get why parents have trouble with it, is because we get hung up in our heads that we're going to make people upset with us, or make the doctor upset with us, or maybe they're going to think we're stupid because we're going to ask a question that isn't relevant, or so we're just not going to say something. And really having control over those kind of thoughts that are going on in somebody's head and saying, "You know what? I'm doing it anyways because it's okay. What's the worst thing that could happen? So what if that ER doc got mad at me for doing that? So what?" I've given myself forgiveness for not doing it well. But it's also you learn from your failures. And I have done it better since. And now, like, I teach people how to do it and do it courageously.
That's amazing, because it is. It's one of those things you don't want to, I think a lot of us don't want to upset anybody. We don't want to cause a fuss. And
yeah.
You're right. Like, I think to myself, there's times where I worry so much and I'm never going to probably likely see that person again in most cases.
Right.
Maybe.
I know.
I mean, why am I, you know, and I think that you're right. Like, kind of getting in our head where I'm never going to see this person again, but my child's here. My child needs
Right.
me, you know?
Right. Yeah.
And I think
yeah.
that's an important thing to remember.
Yeah. And you know, the with doing it, it just like any other skill, you get better at it. So you know, Kylie, like I said, has had diabetes now for 10 years, and there has been ups and downs throughout that journey, and but my ability to advocate for her in the doctor's office and at school and has gotten better because I've practiced that skill over and over again. And the other important thing is she has watched me do it. And to be able then to give her that lesson of being able to advocate for herself is also something incredibly valuable that we as parents have the ability to do.
Yeah, that's a great point. Even just seeing you're advocating, you know, for her,
yes,
powerful. And so because I already can tell you've been talking about it, like, I get like, I'm like, oh my gosh, I'd be so nervous, like in the doctor's office, like you get this news or whatever it may be. When a parent is feeling like they need to say something, and I'm just kind of thinking this as we're talking,
yeah,
what, how, for, I guess for me would be like, how even do I get the words out? Like, out of like a question, would I say, well, what about this? Or I don't know, like, what's the first thing that you say that I think if I could say that part, then I think that I could keep going. Does that make
right.
sense?
Yeah. And so some of it is giving yourself a little bit of time, right? Because initially, like, there's all of these like crazy thoughts that are going on in your head, and and so you just need time to like process those thoughts, because we've all been there, right? Where we leave a place and we're like, gosh, I should have said that. And so you just need like a moment to like quiet your brain for a second to be able to figure out, okay, what am I trying to say? And, you know, a technique for that is just saying, can you tell me a little bit more about X, Y, or Z? Because that allows time. Having a doctor or a school teacher or a counselor, whoever the person that you're working with to advocate for your child, hearing it from them in a different way sometimes can help, but it also allows you to just get a moment to be able to like process something, to then like, well, wait a minute, I hear what you said, but I'm confused, or this worries me because of X, Y, or Z. So forming it like in those types of ways can make it a conversation. You know, we should all go into it understanding it is a conversation. And if your doctor isn't giving you the ability to have a conversation, go seek a second opinion. And because I mentioned like shared decision making, but I know by practicing medicine for many years now that if I tell a patient or a parent to do something, they are never going to do it unless they buy into what I'm telling them. And so, if they're not going to do it because there's an obstacle in the way, I would rather them tell me that, hey, look, I can't do that because, it's too much for us. Okay, well, I let's talk about what that means if you can't do it, and let's figure out what we can do. Like, there's no right or wrong ways. It is a joint process in figuring out a plan in the physician's office or in the school system too. I mean, any kid with a chronic illness has a 504 plan for school. And so that is like negotiating and communicating on trying to figure out, okay, if the school can't do this, like then let's talk about what can they do.
I love that the shift in thinking too, that I think a lot of times, at least I know even myself being in the doctor's office, is in my head, I think it's more of them telling me, information, well, this is what we're going to do next and this. And I like that, just that shift in thinking that it's a conversation really between you and the doctor and your child, because they're your child and it should be a team working on it, instead of, I guess in my head, what I'm so used to is just them telling me, this is what we're going on, this is what we're going to do. So I think that's a great point to make, that shift. And I know we're also going to talk a little bit about, we talked about feeling a little overwhelmed with getting news or getting information, how parents can better understand overwhelm, and then and how you've shared with me about talking just those categories of thought to kind of help you process overwhelm, if you could kind of share
Yeah,
with us.
absolutely. And so I think the feeling of overwhelm happens a lot, right? That even if you don't have a sick kid, like
Oh yes, every day.
every day. But it's been very interesting in what I have studied that now I teach is realizing that emotions like overwhelm are a result of our thoughts. And so, the like, for example, when Kylie was diagnosed with diabetes, I got sent off to the pharmacy to pick up the oodles of stuff that is needed to take care of her. And I come back with like grocery bags of just tons of medical stuff. And she's in the hospital bed, and I take the bags and I like dump them on the bed, and she's looking at it like, oh my God, like this is a cool pile of stuff. Like, look at all this great, medical stuff. And I am staring at this pile, and it is just all I feel is overwhelmed. And I use that as an example because that pile of stuff isn't what is creating the overwhelm, because that pile of stuff to me was overwhelming, to Kylie was exciting. And so it is our brain that is creating that emotion. So for Kylie, her thoughts are, this is cool. Like, look at all this new stuff I get to learn about, which then creates, excitement. In my mind, I look at this pile and my brain's going like, how am I ever going to do this? I don't want to teach Kylie how to do this. She doesn't realize how many times she's going to have to poke herself. There's no cure for this. And so all of those thoughts are what then creates this emotion. The trouble is that we act from emotion. And so with overwhelm, that it is, you get stuck because you're like, I don't even know where to start. And so I'm just going to start scrolling on Facebook or go through TikTok or Google. Over. Yeah. Whatever, because you don't want to have to deal with all the stuff of that is, you know, coming up. So we do things that are buffering. So once we're able to like manage our mind and realize that, yes, there are thoughts, there's thoughts that like people pleasing thoughts. There's thoughts that you should be doing something is a thought that often leads to being in overwhelm. Thoughts about perfectionism, it leads to being an overwhelm. And then finally, like all or nothing, like this is like all or nothing, like there's no in between, like leads to this, like, oh my God, like if it's all or nothing, like what am I gonna do? The way to really overcome overwhelm is getting organized. And yes, getting physically organized is really important, but getting organized in how you manage your brain and recognize the thoughts that are leading to the emotion and be like, I got this, brain, like you are just trying to like do your job and keep me safe. But your thoughts that you think are trying to keep me safe are keeping me stuck right now. So thank you very much for your help, but I got this. And so doing that and practicing that really helps with managing and recognizing being overwhelmed. And like I said, overwhelm is never going to totally go away, but it's recognizing it so it doesn't keep you in this like stuck place, and that you're able to intervene with other thoughts that are leading to other more productive emotions.
That makes total sense. And I think then in what times when I'm overwhelmed and then I feel stuck, then that's overwhelming, you know, like it just kind of.
Yes.
Thinking shit.
Yes, exactly. And you know, we like I said, you sit there and you spin, and part of this spinning is buffering with food. So people like that's where you know, grab the bag of chips and before you know it, like the entire bag of chips is gone. And or doing like social media or like sitting there and like turning on the television and before you know it, you know, hours have gone by. And it's like, because you were in, it's not going to make that emotion go away. It just, you are acting from a place where you're just spinning. And it happens very often with parents of chronically ill kids, because we're so worried about our kids and so worried about the medical issues that come up with them and feel like, oh my goodness, like I can't handle this. I don't know what to do here. And all of that all of those thoughts like make us feel overwhelmed.
And why is it, you know, so important for parents to kind of manage that mindset just overall, like in with when you have a child who is chronically ill or parenting in general, why is it so important to kind of manage your mindset as the parent?
Yeah. So I will say I did a lousy job of it when Kylie was going through her cancer stuff and then early in her diabetes stuff. And I realized, like, here I was trying to be a parent to her, but also trying to be a military officer, be a physician, and be a parent to my other kids too, right? And I realized in all of that, because I wasn't managing my mind, that I got lost. And I put myself last for everything. Like I was terrible about exercising because I'm like, I have time. I was terrible about setting goals for myself. My life was like revolved around everybody else except for me. And and that all stemmed from having an uncontrolled brain, where, I in the book I talk about as a pediatrician, like I love, 2-year-olds because they have gotten the ability to like get into stuff, right? And they're super curious. And but in the doctor's office, like if they're sitting next to like the little ear speculums that look for the use for the ear, they will pull out like each one of them, like boom, boom, boom. They're just pulling out ear speculums because they love it. And and they're not being supervised as they're like pulling these out. Our brain is exactly the same, is that it's flooding us with thoughts, and we're going to continue to like sit there and be unproductive and spin and pull out speculums out of the ear thing because we're not supervising our brain. And so having that control over our mind helps with being in good emotional balance, which then like allows us to dream and reach goals and realize that this life that we thought we were going to have, that because our kid has an illness, like that life didn't seem possible anymore, that now it become like you have an amazing, amazing, beautiful life despite your kid going through tough medical issues. And it all stems from the ability of being able to manage your mind.
It's amazing. And like you said in the beginning, how your life has changed, so much, and what she, your daughter's doing now. And like, that's just, it's just amazing how sometimes we think where our life is headed and it shifts. And I think, just, and I talk a lot in the podcast too about, you have to fill your cup, because how can you pour into others if you are not
For sure. Yeah,
giving yourself
exactly.
what you need? Yeah. And it's not, I always used to think, well, that's selfish, or that's actually opposite of that, because if you can't, you're not, giving yourself what you, how in the world can you give any more of yourself to someone else?
And it also goes to what we were talking about before, that our job as a parent is to teach our kids. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, like our kids learn not just from what we say to them, but they learn by watching us. And so if we're not, exercising or eating well, setting goals that we want to achieve, like that's not selfish. Like, we're doing our job as a parent to do those things because it teaches our kids how important that is to have a productive, successful, beautiful life. And it's such an opportunity to be able to transfer that ability to do that just by having our kids watch us do it.
Yes, where I always, you know, am telling myself I am modeling all the things.
Yeah, all the things.
Yeah. And what it's an important job and also could be, you know, it's just very important, I think. And such an honor to do it, you know. And so your book, I wanted to be able for you just to share a little bit about it. It sounds amazing. And if you could tell us just a little bit, like, you know, who should read your book and what will parents learn from reading it?
Absolutely. So the book is called Reclaiming Life. It's on Amazon. It's at it's online at Barnes and Noble. It's also Audible and Spotify. But it is a book that each chapter tells a story of Kylie when she was sick with cancer, a story of Kylie from diabetes, and a story that of a patient that I took care of. And then each chapter's theme is summed up with lessons. And so it is, it kind of walks through lessons like overwhelm and fear and courage and gratitude. I recently was chatting with a friend of mine who does not have kids. But I told him, well, you're my friend, you have to read the book. And he was kind of dreading it. And he came back to me and said, Maureen, this was amazing that I don't have kids and I even learned something from this. And so your question of like, who should read it? Definitely parents with chronically ill children need to read it. But I would also say that if you know someone or interact with somebody who has a kid with medical issues, like, you should check it out because it gives a perspective that sometimes parents have a very hard time verbalizing when they're going through it. So, you know, grandparents, aunts, uncles should also read it, but it's, it has been a labor of love on writing it, and I'm super proud of it. And I truly hope that it will get into the hands of those who do really need it.
That's amazing. Like you said, even for parents experiencing overwhelm in the hospital or having their children at school, like all those things and the people, not just the parents who may be experiencing it, but like you said, the family members,
right,
kind of better support, you know, the parents and their child. And I'm so excited. I'm going to share about your book, and I'll put the links, you know, in the show notes to this episode, just to kind of get it out to as many people as, and what great work you're doing. So thank you so much for sharing about that, and just some great ways to kind of you know, navigate chronic illness with your child and just overwhelm in general. And I have three just extra questions for you, if you don't mind.
I don't mind.
one of those is, you know, it could be fast food, but also just like a food weakness you have that maybe is something that you just can't pass up if it's offered or you see it. What's a food item that you just love?
That is so easy. It is Oreos. And like, give me a thing of Oreos and before you know it, they will be gone. Like, I cannot have them in the house. I cannot.
I knew we were going to get along so well, because that is one of mine as well. My husband teases me, especially when I was pregnant. This is so embarrassing. I would have like my big belly and I'd have like the sleeves.
Oh,
I think I would watch and I would take dunk, take, and by the time it was over, I was like, I ate all of those. He goes, yeah, you did, but I'm happy you're happy. I am. And I've tried another brand, the Newman's. I don't know if you've tried those, Newman's Own, and it's like their version. So I was trying, probably should be eating, so try to eat pretty as best I can things that are good, but you never know either if they're going to taste like the original. And they were actually very good. So I felt like I was somehow making a better choice, but it's the same amount of calories. But you're right. I think it's just they're so easy. You just keep.
Oh, so easy. And they're so addictive. They're
They
so
are. They
addictive.
are. I think what part of it is maybe I'm just making myself feel better, but they're not as sweet. I feel like there's like almost like so I'm like, oh, this is that much sugar?
Well, and so I primarily eat a plant-based diet, and Oreos are vegan, and so
Let's
yeah,
see.
they have to be healthy, right? Because they're
That's
vegan.
right. Exactly. There's, see, we've got this figured out. another question is there like a, and I know there's so many out there, but a quote or a verse or something that inspired you like on the hard days or on days when you need something to uplift you? Is there any out anyone's out there?
So I would say the one that comes to mind is a quote from Maya Angelou about be the rainbow in someone's cloud. That like I cannot tell you, that's how I like try to live my life. And I have thought about that quote over and over again. Like, if we could all just take a minute to like be the rainbow in somebody's cloud, that wouldn't this world be such a better place?
Absolutely. And especially in the field that you're in, I think, like you said, sometimes when you have parents who are going through a lot, that you can be that rainbow for them, which is incredibly important. And yeah, I wish you were closer that you could be our pediatrician for just a little too far. But I'm sure there's so many families who just adore you and are so blessed to have you. And then my last question is there a piece of advice that you've gotten in life that that you could share with my mamas?
I think it would be never forget to say thank you. Like my parents, even when I was a little kid, that it was birthday parties, like you were handwriting thank you notes, and that I the that is something that I have really like taught my kids too, is that it always, always, like even if something doesn't go your way, that always say thank you. And again, like what a great place this world would be if everybody took a time to be grateful for each other.
Absolutely. That it's so funny. It reminds me even, my mom is both of my parents, my mom is one to definitely be the writer. And it's just habit now. It feels weird not to say thank you, which I am so grateful for that, and I hope to instill in my kids. Like I feel like I'm a broken record to say thank you, but I try to do it not like a I'm hovering over them, but just like have it. So that just becomes more natural. And just I think like you said, even writing, just that old, habit of writing, getting something from someone that's written, it means so much. And I think that's great advice, especially for my audience who's raising little ones and how easy that is to do. It's really doesn't take much time. So
Absolutely.
yeah, well, thank you so much. How can parents find you and learn more about what you do and how you help?
So my website is the best way to see more about what I'm doing. It's Maureen Michelle MD.com, and Michelle is spelt with one L. My email is team@MaureenMichelleMD.com. I'm also on Facebook and Instagram. So please follow me. I would love to interact with your audience more and would love to answer any more of their questions if they had any after listening to the episode.
Awesome. And I will put all of your info also in our show notes. Thank you so much.
Oh, awesome.
Well, for sharing today with us and just inspiring parents to, you know, just be courageous through those difficult times that come up. Thank you.
I thank you for allowing me to be here and to share this time with you and have this conversation, because I do think, I mean, this is what I'm passionate about, and I think it's important, and I know that your audience will get something from it.
Thank you so much.
Hey, Mama. Thank you for joining me at the barn today for the Whole Mama podcast. I hope you've laughed, reflected, and learned something valuable to take home to your family. I'll meet you right back here next week. And in the meantime, focus on these important things. Take care of yourself. Read daily with your children, and find times throughout the day to truly be present with your family. This time is precious, so we must embrace those moments and be intentional about it. Lastly, remember to find those things that bring you joy daily. That cup of coffee, those comfy leggings, that song or that scripture, or even that glass of wine. Whatever it is, make sure you find that daily joy for yourself. You deserve it, Mama. If you enjoyed this show, please consider supporting it and click the Buy Me a Coffee link in the show notes. For more content, community, and connection, please subscribe to receive a monthly Whole Mama newsletter at my blog at iamthewholemama.com and follow me on social media. Thank you again for joining me today, and I'll meet you right back here for our next episode at The Whole Mama.